Okay, now, you said though our decision, step three, was critical. It could have a little permanent effect. So the making the decision has no, doesn't do it, have no effect whatsoever until we go to work to remove the things to carry out this decision. We have to, certain things we've got to do to carry out step three. And it says, unless at once, and Charlie and I just wonder why Bill selects certain words. And people say, well, when do you take step four? Well, it says right there, at once, right after three.
Doesn't say 38 days.
And really, that would be the best time to take step four, would be right after three. That was to be your best time to do it. Closer we can get behind three, that would be the best time to take four. It says, we have to get down, which the things have been blocking us. We have to get down to the things that are blocking us from God, blocking us from that decision we just made in step three. So step four is to get rid of the things that are blocking us from our decision in step three. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory grows broke. And we're going to get into another parable, which is really something. And he uses so many useful things that we use something that we can all understand. Like, we all understand whether we're in business or not, we've been around, or we're all familiar with businesses. We're all familiar with inventory in a business. And if we had a, and we want to look at, he's going to get us to compare our business to a commercial business. And each and every individual, each and one of us has a business. We got one of the most important business in the world, our lives. And we are to look, make our lives a business and compare it with a commercial business.
You know, if we really look at our business, and our business is our life and the way we're going to live and whether we're going to be happy or not. And we can have a choice. We can have a good business or we can have a lousy business. You know, we can live a good life or we can live a lousy life. And my business is to try to find a way where I can live and live the good life. Now, the same thing holds true with a commercial business. A guy that's running a store and he's selling a product, I don't care what the product is, whether it's peanuts or popcorn or clothes or automobiles. You know, he can have a good business or he can have a lousy business. And a business which takes no inventory usually does go broke. And in the comparison of a commercial inventory, he's going to talk to us about the things that this commercial inventory has upon its shelf. And a business that doesn't look at this stuff doesn't really know what's going on inside the business. And if he's got damaged and unsaleable goods on the shelf, then they're simply taking up shelf space. And they're not being resold and no profits are being made. And those damaged and unsaleable goods blocks him off from making profits. And he has to inventory and see what they are. And when he sees what isn't selling, he gets rid of it. And then he replaces it with good items that will sell so his business can be a success. Not only does it block his shelf space off, but he's got his money invested in it and he's paying interest on that stuff. And he's not only not making money, he's losing money. And the book begins to compare with a parable the two businesses that it talks about. It says, taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. And I love to compare that with our step. We made a searching and a fearless inventory. Now, a searching inventory is a fact-finding inventory. A fearless inventory is a fact-facing inventory. And this commercial inventory, this guy goes in his store and he looks over everything in that store. And he finds out all the facts that he possibly can about the items that's on the shelf. And he faces the fact. He fearlessly looks at it and he said, man, this is what I've got to get rid of. The commercial inventory is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. Now, our step says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory. And one of the great disservices that's been paid to you and I is when people see the word moral, they immediately think of a list of dirty, filthy, nasty things. And I don't believe that's what Bill intended. If he had wanted us to list only that dirty, filthy, nasty things, he would have said an immoral or an amoral inventory. He didn't say that. He said a moral inventory. You go look the word moral up in a dictionary, and it says the truth. And he compared his words again. A moral inventory is the truth. Now, what is it the truth about? For the commercial inventory, it is the truth about the stock in trade. The stock in trade is what's on the shelf today. When I take my inventory, my stock in trade in my business of living is how I think. And I'm going to inventory to see the truth about the stock in trade. My shelf is filled with thoughts. And let's face it, some of my thoughts are damaged and unsaleable. And they're getting me in trouble. And if I don't get rid of them, they will continue to get me in trouble until my business goes plumb broke. You see, whether I drink tomorrow or not will depend upon how I think today. And my business is thinking. And I already recognize that as I go through the book. So as I inventory, my inventory will be my thoughts for today, not 20 years ago, not 10, not 5, but right now, today. When he goes in and looks over the items on his shelf, he's not looking at what was there 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. He's looking at what's there today that he needs to get rid of and replace. And my inventory is going to be the same thing, my thinking today. One object, to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about value.
Charlie said that, you know, our lives are our stock in trade, and that's really our business is my life today, and our lives, each right today, our lives will be a sum total today of the thoughts that go through our minds. That will be our lives today. And that's what we want to examine, you know, in our business. What are we trading off? As Charlie says, the word inventory, if we look it up in the dictionary, we're talking about an inventory. You know, people say, is it written out? Well, all inventories are written out. An inventory is a written list of items in one's view or in one's possession. What stock do we have in possession? Now, let's be careful here, and so the first thing we go into inventory is resentments. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And as we say, most of the time, you know, we always at this point, it's easy to spot a selfish, self-centered person. Number one, he's always mad at somebody. And he's always afraid. He's always in conflict with something. That's obvious. So what we're going to try to do is to see, you know, make an inventory of these items. Resentment is the number one offender that destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. We're not been only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. We talk about resentments. We know that the word itself means, it's self-explanatory. I love the word resentments. It comes from the word re, and whenever we see that first on front of the word, that means again, or repeat, or back again. And it comes from the word re, word centaur, which means to feel. So it means to re-feel or to feel over again. And really we say that people caused us resentments, but people really can't do that. Really, only thing a person can do us wrong or strike us, can strike self. In fact, you can't have a resentment unless self is struck. Self is the root of the problem. Now, people will, by the way, they will do this anyway. People will do this whether you're good or whatever you do, people are going to strike you. That's just human nature. People will tell, this is what this life is all about. But once a person strikes us, then that's a wrong. But when we replay the incident over again, that is the resentment. You know, and someone comes up and we selfish, self-centered alcoholic, we're really good at this. And when every time somebody strikes you, you replay it over, you replay the whole scene through. And what makes it so sick about it, you are playing it over again just to get the hurt out of it and let the person hurt you a second time. And the person can't hurt you but once. But every time you play it over again, the hurt grows worse and worse and worse. And we alcoholics are this is our number one offender. And we go out each day, and I always look, think about this as my videotape player. You know, the alcoholic has got he tunes his videotape player in living color every morning, shines it up and tunes it in, and he goes out on the world and he replays every bad scene. He don't buy good ones. He picks up all the hurts. Then he comes home at night and turns it back on and replays it to get the hurt. And he sees, he begins to punish himself and punish himself. And he sees himself as a victim. And he sees himself as a threat. Everybody's against him. And then we get some sort of an ego sickness out of it. Because when everybody picks on you, that seems to make you a big shot. The whole world is after me. And we get, this is one of the worst emotional illnesses a person can have. And it's a two-fold sword, because not only do people strike us, and once this is done, then we resent being in the position where this could have happened. So the resentments against other people that we play over and over and over, finally we begin to resent ourselves. And this is one of the worst sickness, because this is what we call self-pity, which is self-resentments. So resentments go in, and then they, you know, go outside, and then they come back inside. One is resentment against others, and the worst thing is our self-resentments, our self-pity. And this is the number one offender. We spend majority of our discomfort comes from this one pattern, resentments.
Our book tells us that one object of this inventory was to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. But we did the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, the damaged and unsaleable goods. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Yeah. Now, the most common manifestation of self-will is resentment. Anger, fear. We're always running around mad at people, places, and things because they simply are not treating us right and they're not doing the way we want them to do, and etc. Now, if I want God's will to direct my thinking, then I've got to get resentment out of there. Now, a mind that is filled with resentment is not receptive to anything else except to the resentment. It can only deal with one thing at a time. And all the time that we're dealing with resentment, we have effectively blocked ourselves off from any other kind of thought, actions, or feelings. Now, we believe also one of the great problems with step four is we've never known how Bill took the inventory. I think the problem is the example of the inventory sheet on page 65 is the fact that it's already filled out, and we really didn't understand how Bill filled it out. And therefore, we've become confused with this thing, and we've searched for other ways to take an inventory. In one place in the book, it refers to all our life stories. So we got the idea that the way to take the inventory was to sit down and write all of our life story. And he really doesn't say to do that in the book. That didn't seem to satisfy us, so somebody else made an inventory sheet, such as Hazelden, and we began to try to use it. And then we got one from another place and tried to use it. And then we mixed three or four in with the big book, and now we don't know what the hell to do. But if we will carefully read the book, we can find the exact instructions on how to take this inventory. We've made a sheet in your handout material up here on the screen. This sheet is nothing new. Let us stress this. This is not an attempt to bring in new information or new ideas. All that sheet is Bill's example on page 65, blank. There's three columns, and he shows them on 65. Yes, our sheet does have a fourth column. We'll refer to that in a couple more pages. Right now, we're going to look at the first three columns, and they're headed up, I'm resentful at, the cause, and affects mine. And you might, on your sheet, for the time being, just fold that fourth column under, the one that says what's the exact nature of my wrongs, faults, mistakes, or just fold that sheet under, that edge. Okay, let's go to looking for instructions. You going over there?
Yeah, I'm going over there.
Bottom of page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Now, this should lay to rest forever whether there's any question about a written or a mental inventory. If you're going to set them on paper, that's a written inventory. So that should solve that question right there. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. The first column says, I'm resentful at. We start at the top of that column and we start making a list. We list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now probably that'll be enough for most of you, but I had to have 4 or 5 sheets on mine. And we go from top to bottom. Do not attempt to go from left to right. In most societies, in reading and writing, you always go from left to right.
Yeah, do not.
And in the past, we've attempted to go from left to right on this form. Don't do that. While your mind is concentrating on one thing and one thing only, I'm resentful at, we fill out the left-hand column. Now, anybody can do that. It's a very simple thing. We all know who we're mad at. Bill was mad at Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, my employer, my wife, and probably many more. He just didn't have room to list any more than those four. That's the first instruction in the big book. Joe?
Okay, and we see how simple that would be. Any new alcoholic just in the program can list every person he resents. You know, it doesn't have to, but if we go from left to right, you're going to have to change your mind 3 times every time you go across, and you're going to get lost in it. Do not go from left to right. You have to, but just go straight down. Who all do I resent? Any alcoholic can do that. Any person can do that. No matter how confused, any person in the beginning can go through that. Now, after we do that, then we come to the next column. We asked ourselves why we were angry. So we come over to the cause column, and we fill this column in, looking at each name going from top to bottom. Easy enough to do. Your mind is thinking about one thing. What was the cause? Now, let's listen to the causes in the description in Bill's inventory. Mr. Brown, his attention to my wife. Told my wife about my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. Boy, hell, I would have resented him. Boy, that's tough, wasn't it?
I don't blame him. I'd be madder than hell, too.
Mrs. Jones, she's a snub. She's a nut. She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's a gossip. My employer, unreasonable, unjust, probably wants him to come to work on Mondays. Overbearing. Threatens to fire me for paying my expense account. I love it. My wife misunderstands and nags. Everybody's got one. Likes Brown. Wants to put the house in her name. God, you know. And we just go putting the causes. All you have to do is look at the name. After you get the names down, the next list is simple. And just write in the cause beside each name from top to bottom. Mine's on one thing. Very simple to do.
And if you happen to be mad at one that you don't really know, just put down unknown for the cause. But it's pretty hard to be mad at somebody unless you know why you're mad at them. Almost invariably, there's a reason there. Third instruction. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Which part of self is injured? Which part of self has been struck? Was it our self-esteem? Was it our security? Was it our ambitions? Was it our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with? We were usually as definite as this example. Your third column is self, and we look very carefully to see which part of self has been affected in this resentment. Let's look again at Bill's example. Now, he's mad at Brown, and he's mad at Brown because of Brown's attention to his wife. Well, the part of self that has been affected by this is sex relations. Because after all, if my wife gets to fooling with Brown, and she finds out old Brown's better than I am, chances are she's going to cut me off at home. And certainly, that's going to affect my self-esteem. So I'm going to go over to that column, and under the social instinct, I'm going to put a check mark by self-esteem. And in the sex instinct, I'm going to put a check mark under sex relations, and it will be my acceptable sex relations between myself and my wife. Now, I'm also mad at Brown because Brown told my wife about my mistress. Now, you talk about screwed up sex relations. You know, that really affected my sex relations. Because as soon as my wife found out about my mistress, she cut me off at home. So my acceptable sex relations are gone. But she didn't stop there. She went over and got hold of my mistress. And by the time she got done with my mistress, by God, my mistress has cut me off over there, too. Now my hidden sex relations are gone, and I got none left at all. And this affects my self-esteem. What are people going to think about me now that this is all out in the open? I've been trying to hide this mistress part over here, and now it's all revealed, and what in the world is the neighbors and everybody else going to think about me? Also mad at Brown because Brown might get my job at the office. Now, this is a threat to my material security. I can't make a living now. I won't have any money coming in. Can't drink. Can't support my mistress. Can't do nothing. And it affects my self-esteem. What are people going to think about me since Brown's undercut me and got my job at the office? Right down the line we go, taking each situation. And for the first time in our lives, we begin to see where the resentment stems from, not necessarily what they did, but from our reaction to it based upon self-will and self-thinking. You know, we could take Mr. Brown's name out of here, and we could put Mr. Green's name in its place, and I'd be just as mad at Green as I was at Brown. And the first thing I realize is it's not the individual. It's my reaction to what the individual is doing. And I begin for the first time to really see what self-will is doing to me and how self-will itself causes the resentment and how self-will is what blocks me off from God. It's not what they did, but how I reacted based upon self-will and self-centeredness.
Now we begin in step three, which says self is the root of our problems. And if we have done it, we do our resentment list like this, we will have, you know, step four over here. And it will be also be able to go back to the root of the problem, which is step three. We see step three here. Step four, all of this, we can see right on the same sheet if we, when we get into it. We can see the root of our resentments. Now, there's two words here, and we're always talking about listing our resentments. This is a listing of resentments, this first column. But our book says this process is listing and analyzing. This is listing. This is analyzing our resentments.
Now we've listed them. We've looked at them. We've seen where self is the root, the cause of the resentment. And now let's really begin to analyze the resentment and really see what it does to us. This is the most revealing thing I ever found in my life.
Now again, before we go on, he knows how we are, and he gives us instructions at the bottom of page 64. He repeats them at the top of page 65 again. On our grudge list, see here, on our grudge list, obsolete name, was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambition, our relationship, which had been interfered with? He gives us instructions twice in a row how to do this.
Let's go to the bottom of page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. We're listing all these resentments. When we were finished with this, we considered it carefully. We filled out our resentment sheet. We marked self and all that. And now we're going to look at the whole picture. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. And that's absolutely true. Everybody operates on self-will to various different degrees. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody hurts other people. And the world and its people in it are often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. And that's exactly as far as I ever went with this mess. I could always tell you what you had done wrong. I'm great at taking your inventory. Always knew exactly what you were doing that caused my problems. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Spent all my life figuring out what you did wrong, and I just stayed sore about it all the time. Sometimes it was remorse. Once in a while I could see where I was wrong, and then I was sore at myself. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Spent all my life trying to get even with you for what you've done. But I never did really gain anything by that. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? And when I read that, I had to stop and think. Used to, when I drank, one of my favorite things was to get up in the morning and have a cup of coffee and a drink of whiskey and turn on my replay machine and replay what those dirty SOBs did to me yesterday. Last week, last year, 5 years ago, 10 and 15 and 20. And I could spend at least an hour doing that, and I really enjoyed doing it. Then I could have another cup of coffee and another drink of whiskey and turn on my get-even machine
and start figuring out how I was going to get even with him for doing it. Now, he's going to do this, and then I'm going to do that. And he'll react in this manner, and she'll say that. And all of a sudden, sucker, I'm going to lay it on him, and I'm going to show them suckers. And I spent hours and hours and hours and hours. After I quit drinking, my favorite thing was to get up and have a cup of coffee, leave the whiskey off, turn on the replay machine and the get-even machine. Now, I never accomplished anything whatsoever by doing that. You know, if I hadn't have been wasting all that time, at least I could have been mowing the grass. I could have been painting the house or doing the dishes or making the beds. But I was completely stymied by dealing with the resentments and running them through my head over and over and over. Now, that's bad. But that isn't the worst problem. Here comes the worst problem. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of the spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, we decided in 3 to let God direct our thinking. If our mind is filled with resentment, he can't direct our thinking. We have effectively blocked him out because the mind's only going to deal with one thing at a time. And when it's filled with resentment, God's blocked off. Now, the result of that is the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. We run around with these resentments long enough and the mind begins to say, by golly, I'd like to feel better. And it says, I know what'll make me feel better, and if I had a drink of it, it'd be okay. And then it starts that old pattern of, well, you've been sober 30 days or 60 or 90 and you ought to be, and next thing you know, we have eluded ourselves into believing we can drink, and we pick up the drink, trigger the allergy, and then we're drunk and sick and in all kinds of trouble. We see them all the time in AA. We see people come in, and maybe for 30 days, 60 or 90, they're on a pink cloud. And then we see them start getting mad. And we see them griping and bitching and raising hell. And it gets worse and worse and worse, and after a while, you don't see them. And you say, where's John? Well, haven't you heard? Hell, John's back in the treatment center again. Invariably, this cuts us off from the sunlight of the Spirit and leads us back to drinking. So anymore for me, it's not a question of who's right and who's wrong. The only question is, what does a resentment do to me? And a resentment kills me. The book says if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Now then, we're not looking to see who's wrong and who isn't. Now we're looking at it from the angle that if we don't do something about it, we're going to die. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others fancied or real had power to actually kill. And I read that and I almost fell over backwards. I, who have always been so proud of the fact that I stood on my own 2 feet, made my own decisions, run my own show, and nobody tells me what to do, I suddenly realized that through my resentments, these people are determining how I think. And if they determine how I think, then they also are going to determine how I act. And I'm not running the show. They're running the show. And then on top of that thought came another one. I said, my God, some of them have been dead 20 years. And they're reaching out from the grave and they got me but a yang yang and they've been running my life all my life. And I said, I'm not going to let them people live in my head rent free no more. No more. I don't have to do that. Now, how can I escape this mess? Remember, self can't overcome self. We saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how?
We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Boy, I'm seeing now I've got to get rid of them and got to get them out of there, but how am I going to do that? Well, this was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, and they are. They're just as sick as we are. And though we're not like their symptoms in the way these disturbed us lay like ourselves, we're sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." And we hear over and over and over about the step 3 prayer and the step 7 prayer, but you never hear about the step 4 prayer. To get rid of resentments, we learn to pray for those that we resent. And God, this is hard to do. You take an old boy that you really got one of them good resentments for, that you just about soon see him dead as alive, and you realize you're going to have to start praying for him. Simple, but certainly not easy. There's a good example in the big book on this prayer and how it actually works. If you have a third edition, if you would go to page 551, it will show you exactly how to remove a resentment. Joe?
Okay, in this example, in this story, this is a beautiful, I love it. I've had many spiritual experiences since I've been in the program.
Take us back to drinking, and we start wanting to get rid of it, so we begin to work on it, and we start praying for these people. And gradually the resentment begins to disappear. You know, I had one fellow that I had a resentment against, that I really hated him. I'd just about soon see him dead. In fact, I would gladly have killed him if I could have gotten by with it without going to the penitentiary. And I told my sponsor, I said, "There's no way that I can get rid of this resentment." He says, "You'll have to, or it's going to kill you." And I said, "I can't. How am I going to do it?" And he took me back to this section of the book. And he said, "Pray for the guy and it'll disappear." And I remember going home and asking God to make me willing to be willing to pray for this fellow. And I became willing to pray for him. And I never will forget, I got down on my knees at the side of my bed. And I said, "God, I want you to give that son of a bitch everything that he deserves." And of course, it didn't work either. But the next day I prayed and it was a little bit different. And 4 or 5 days later I found myself saying, "God, give that fella in his life what I would like to have in my life." And the prayer gradually began to change. And 8, 9, 10, 11 days, I don't know when, I found myself praying that the man have exactly whatever I want for myself. And you know, the damn resentment disappeared. And today I see this individual, like we walk down the street and we speak and we shake hands and we're good friends. What used to be hatred has now turned to something entirely, completely different. And the thing that has happened is, it's not for his benefit, but it freed my mind of that resentment. I just think, for the first time in my life, my mind is becoming free of resentments. And if it's free of resentments, then there's a little peace, a little happiness, a little serenity coming in the mind, and the possibility that God might be able to enter my mind, since now it's not in so much turmoil and constantly filled with resentment. One other little thing we do. We got 2 more minutes to finish it up. You got a 4th column on your sheet. A 4th column on your sheet.
Turn that flap out.
Turn that little flap out that you folded under a while ago.
4th column.
And it says, "What is the nature, exact nature of my wrongs, faults, mistakes, defects, or shortcomings?"
Let's look at 6 and 7.
I went to the dictionary again and looked up the word nature. Always thought it dealt with birds and bees. But there's a definition that says the inherent characteristic of something. The wrong, the fault, the mistake is the resentment. You know, to think wrong, to act wrong, to judge wrong is a wrong. The resentment is the wrong, but what's the nature of the resentment? What's really within me that allows the resentment to be there?
It'll do me no good to get rid of the resentments if I don't work on the root cause of the resentment. Because if I don't remove the root cause, the resentments will continue to come back. And in the book, it refers to four or five basic root causes. And we're going to see where Bill has interchangeably used words to mean the same thing. Faults, mistakes, defects, shortcomings, using them all to indicate the same thing. Look at the middle of page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them, we placed them before us in black and white, we admitted our wrongs honestly, and were willing to set these matters straight. Due to self-will, I have developed within my character certain personality traits. I have become a very selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, frightened, inconsiderate individual. And because of that way, I'm always reacting to and doing things that throw me in conflict with other people. It is not what they do which upsets me. It's how I react based upon my personality. One day you can do it to me and it just slides off my back like water off a duck back. The next day you do the same thing, I go through the roof with anger. It's not what you did, it's how I reacted. If I wasn't so selfish and self-seeking, if I wasn't so dishonest, I wouldn't be putting myself in positions to get hurt. If I wasn't so frightened and inconsiderate of other people, I wouldn't be doing things to them that cause them to retaliate against me, and I wouldn't have to feel the resentment to start with. Invariably, I find that in almost all my resentments, I have placed myself in a position to be hurt because of a decision that I made based upon self-will. The man I hated so badly was a business partner. And we started a little business. It went quite well. We made some money. And he absconded with the funds, and we went bankrupt. Hated his guts, gladly have killed him. When I worked this thing all the way across, I suddenly realized something. He didn't come to me to be a partner. I went to him. He had two things I needed. Number one, he had some money that I didn't have. And number two, he had some expertise that I didn't have. And with my cunning intellectual alcoholic mind, I had figured out a way to use him. And I got him to be the partner. And we partnered and the business became a success, and then he absconded with the funds. And I hated him because he absconded with the funds, but he could never have done that if I had not put myself in a position to have that done to me and I made a decision based on self. And nearly every resentment I have is because of the fact that I put myself there to let that happen to me. And even if I didn't put myself in a position, even if what they did was entirely their fault, if I wasn't so damn selfish and self-centered, I would be a little more considerate of them, and I wouldn't get so mad at them when they screwed up. I finally begin to see the parts of my personality that's going to have to change if I want to keep resentments away in the future. So in this manner, I learned to look at resentments, analyze resentments, get rid of resentments, and keep them from coming back in the future. And my mind starts to become free and open and receptive to God's will. That's the first part of the fourth step inventory. That's all we're going to do for this morning.